Hello and welcome to The Stack. This week we celebrate 100 issues of cycling prime title Ruler. We also speak with the new editor of The Face magazine, and it is always good to have Beth Wilkinson from Lindsay magazine back on board. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, The Face magazine's new editor and Lindsay magazine from Australia. But first, it's time to check in on a title we featured previously on The Stack. In the world of professional cycling, Ruler is the marquee print title, which is a celebration of racing alongside a closer look at the history and culture of the sport. This month, the magazine will publish its 100th edition. To mark the occasion, the magazine has undergone a redesign with the help of Pentagram. It caps a remarkable 15th year for the London-based magazine, which has seen its print subscriptions increase by 65%. Ruler will also publish Spanish and Italian editions of the magazine for the very first time. To learn more about Ruler's 100th edition, Monaco's cycling fanatic Daniel Bache spoke to Ruler editor Andy McGraw.
Yes, Ruler is an independent cycling magazine and always has been. And it was born at Rafa, the iconic cycling clothing brand, 15 years ago. It was sprung from a conversation between Rafa's founder, Simon Mottram, and Ruler's founder, Guy Andrews. And they both had this shared passion for the sport of cycling, which we have to remember was very niche, especially in the UK. 15 years ago, we didn't have Tour de France champions. We didn't have this bevy of Olympic medals. But they loved the sport. They loved nostalgia. And there wasn't a magazine that catered for their passions. So that was a kind of eureka moment. They had a chat and they decided to make the first edition from a room in Rafa HQ in North London. And I think for the first few issues, they were paying contributors with cycling kit, and Guy was pretty much doing it all himself, you know, stacking the envelopes. And yeah, I think they were worried with the first issue that they had a whole storeroom full of magazines and they were really concerned it wouldn't sell out. Like, what do you do? I suppose it's the nerves before the first performance in a way, but they did sell out and it kept selling out. And over the years, yeah, we've gone from being partnered with Rafa, we're still close with Rafa, but we are now independent from them, to growing from being four times a year to now eight times a year. Still based around international pro cycling, but we're broadening out now to encompass all of cycling culture. And still with this focus on beautiful long-form storytelling and documentary photography. You know, we don't like photos of people with crossed arms staring at the camera. It's not real, you know. Whether it's the interviews or the photography, it has to be real. Cycling is such a visceral sport, you want to capture that moment, whether it's in the race or in a certain interview. And that's what we have done over the last 100 issues, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Just thinking about the editorial, professional cycling, of course, is still a very niche thing, but Ruler does an incredible job, I think, of diving deep into not only the culture of the sport, but sort of the history of it as well. But you get right into sort of the professional peloton by having riders write for you as well, which is really interesting. Talk to me about sort of how you grow the sport and help in that sense. Obviously, a lot of people will only know cycling for the troubling aspects of past years, but it's evolving a lot along with, you know, just regular cycling that isn't in the professional world. So how do you sort of marry that with the editorial of what you're doing?
Of course, we don't shy away from topics like doping, which has been a problem in cycling, really in most sports, for decades. But when it comes to, for example, interviews, we try to be timeless, firstly. Like, if we're going to interview a Tour de France contender for the first time, it might be the only time in years. So we want to capture the essence of who they are as a person. Of course, also as a cyclist. And I think they really appreciate that. That's one of our strengths, that we ask for a lot, and we have asked for a lot over time. to the point that we have a trusted reputation within the sport. So, for example, the ideal for us is not a 30-minute interview at a hotel, which happens in other sports. The ideal is spending a day at home with these Tour de France contenders, with these top sprinters. And this is one of the great things about cycling, that it's so accessible. You can get close to Formula One stars. You can get near to top footballers. On the start line of the Tour de France, journalists can be talking to the yellow jersey wearer, to the leader of the race, up to the point they roll off. And so we make the most of that as well. And that trust works both ways.
So we're up to 100 issues now, and you've decided, along with launching in two new languages, you've also undergone a redesign that people who are familiar with the title will certainly notice in the next issue. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so kind of issue 100 was this big thing for me. And I remember there was a meeting probably last autumn where already I was bringing up this big landmark, and it needs to be amazing. It needs to be special. It needs to be the best we've ever done. And I think they were like, okay, it's a year away. Like, stop banging on about this thing. But we worked for months to redesign it and to look at the things we could improve. We wanted it to be a refresh, kind of design-wise, but also editorially. So we have some things that look backwards. The top 100 moments in cycling kind of made sense with the century issue. Looking back over the history and all these defining things. But we also look to the future. You know, we've got a piece about how cycling can be much more green post-pandemic and kind of use that as a chance to reset. And we're talking to some of the future champions as well. We just wanted it to be a step change. And it was a lot of work, but it was incredibly rewarding, you know, when you finish it. And it is like working with a new magazine, you know, when it all looks different. And it's, speaking as an editor, I'm sure some can relate. It's, you're always trying to make the perfect issue. And it's really intoxicating. It's that search. And there are always constraints. So you can't really be a perfectionist in this industry. But I think we've done pretty damn near to perfect here.
That's really exciting. You know, for people who aren't totally familiar with Ruleur, one of the really interesting things that I found is there are two different covers, and there has been two different sizes as well. Sort of the magazine you would pick up on a magazine rack at a shop at the airport, and the one that goes out to subscribers. I am a happy paying subscriber, and one of my favorites. Our listeners can't see this, but this is probably my favorite cover, and that's the one with the Pegoretti bike frames. That's a manufacturer we've actually featured on the business show, an incredible bike maker from Verona. You know, that is a story that goes well beyond the professional Peloton, we can say, and professional riders. That's more about the love of the sport and sort of the heritage around that. Talk to us about the things that will be familiar for readers in this refresh and in the issues ahead.
Well, this is the thing, that cycling is just a starting point for Ruleur's articles. So, of course, we love the sport, but we also love to tie in history or tie in culture, because cycling doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's not confined to a stadium. These bike riders are moving across Italy, across Spain. So it's really nice to just draw in loads of different stories and keep people guessing. So we like to have cycling as a starting point and then take a risk or do something different. So what people are going to see in the next issues, we're still going to have the same in-depth interviews and still be a focus on pro cycling. But we do have two new international editions. We're going to be launching in Italy and in Spain. These are heartlands of cycling. These are countries that have loved the sport for over 100 years. And it's a fertile market as well. It's a real opportunity there. And it's just, we're planning even more. We're planning for bigger things. Because what we do is kind of slow journalism doesn't almost sound right. It's more like long journalism. It's the further you plan ahead, can sometimes really, really bear dividends. So we're going to have some different themes of editions next year. So we've stuck more closely to the cycling calendar in recent years. But I can't give too much away, but we're going to be diverting into more general themes that are really exciting. And the first issue of 2021 is going to be taboo-busting, inspiring, unprecedented, I think, in sports media. So here's to the next 100 issues.
Ruler editor Andy McGraw there, speaking to Monocle's Daniel Bage. Issue 100 is on sale from next week at select newsagents. And now it's time to talk The Face. The title returned to the newsstands last year, and of course we've covered it here on The Stack. The iconic title is doing very well since its return, still portraying the best of youth culture. I spoke to Matthew Whitehouse, the new editor of the magazine, about the latest issue with singer George Smith on the cover.
We made the decision to do one cover, George Smith, that I think gave the magazine a lot of tight focus. You know, doing only one cover star, it allows you to fit stuff around it, I think, in a really, really tight and really coherent way. One thing that I've not spoken about a huge amount with this issue is that we shot almost all of it in the UK, bar one fashion story. The entire issue was shot in Britain. And some of that was practical reasons. So some of that was, you know, with all of the restrictions going on, it was just a bit easier to shoot here. And some of that was informed by Georgia being on the cover and she being our first British cover star since the first issue when we had Harry and Dua Lipa on there. And some of it was when, I guess, we were going to print just the day before, I think, or 2 days before the US election. And it felt like we couldn't really talk about the United States because of that, because, you know, you could go to print and whatever you print could feel out of date, you know, after the election a few weeks later when it comes out. So we made the decision to focus on stories from within Britain. And I think it really did make the magazine feel very, very coherent and very tight. And I think it has a real tone of voice because of it.
And let's be honest, I mean, the UK is an essential part of the DNA of The Face. And there's some great stories as well, not only with George Smith, but there's a fantastic portfolio of the UK rap scene as well. That was quite impressive. A lot of people that I didn't know, and I'm sure I'll be Googling to listen to some of their tracks.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people I didn't know either, I must say. And full credit to our music editor, Davey Reed, who really has brought an incredible energy to what we do in terms of our music coverage. I think we both agree, Davey and I, that we didn't want to only cover musicians that you are used to seeing in the pages of trendy magazines. We were very, very certain that we wanted to accurately and genuinely reflect what people were listening to up and down the country. And the dominant sound of this year in the UK has been UK rap. So I'm very, very pleased to have that and have such a beautiful, beautiful styled shoot as well.
And Matthew, I have a question. I mean, it's your first issue as an editor, but you've been together with the Face team since they've returned to the newsstand. What about your reader? Because now there's been a few issues. I mean, are you guys getting kind of a younger audience, or do you see people perhaps that used to read The Face, like The Face from the past, you know, from decades ago? I mean, or perhaps a balance of both?
Yes, you see both, I think. I think it's, as I say, I think it's our job to very accurately reflect youth culture, you know? I think it's important to reflect what's happening in the world. I don't know if people buy magazines anymore to be told what's going to be cool in 3 months' time. They buy them to some extent because they see themselves reflected in them, and they see them as a marker in time and a reflection of where we're at in the world. And so I want us to really, really reflect youth culture. And now youth culture and just having young people in the magazine are two different things. You know, for example, the issue before this, we had Travis Scott on the cover. He's not a teenager, you know, but he's part of youth culture because young people like him. And I think that's an important distinction to make. But no, we're a broad church, and I hope that people who read The Face in its first, you know, incarnation also enjoy it now. That would be a wonderful thing.
Well, I think I include myself, but I got the late part of the ode, the face, in a way. So, but I'm very happy that he did return on my lifetime. And tell us, Matthew, there's some interesting partnerships that are going on with Montclair Future Academy. I wonder if you can tell us more about that as well.
Certainly, yeah. And you know, to be completely honest, there are people in the business who are much better place to talk about than I, because they've worked so hard on it while I was a lot more at work on the magazine. It's being predominantly led by our brilliant digital director, Brooke McCord, and our head of video, Jennifer Byrne, I believe, are two people who've been very, very involved in it. But the Future Academy idea is an initiative with both Montclair and with an organization called Create Jobs, whose work is kind of in recruiting, I guess, trainees from underrepresented backgrounds and trying to find work in the creative industries, as it's called. So in this particular partnership, there will be two chosen individuals, and they will both get a kind of paid placement here at the FACE in London, and then they'll also do some time at Montclair in Milan. And it'll be sort of what we have planned is not just kind of turn up and do some photocopying for 2 months. You know, there's a real program of kind of modules, talks, you know, courses that they're going to do while they're with us, that will kind of give a real crash course, I guess, into what we do. And the end goal is that they will produce something that ends up in the pages of the FACE, you know. So it has a very tangible goal at the end of it, which I think is really exciting.
And in between the issues as well, I'm enjoying quite a lot the newsletter that you send to your subscribers or whoever wants to subscribe to the newsletter. I think it's a very smart way that you guys did the newsletter as well. So congratulations on that aspect as well.
Thank you. It's nice. It's nice, actually, when I get it. I think it arrives on a Saturday or a Sunday. And it's nice to look back at the stuff that we've done on the site. I mean, it's always such a mix, you know, so it's kind of nice for me to look at as well.
And Matthew, coming back to print in a way, I remember when the FACE returned, I think most people, they were quite excited and welcoming, but some others were asking, oh, why come back in print? But, you know, one thing that I'm noticing, you know, hosting the Stack, for example, this year, I mean, just a few months ago, we had a return of Playgirl magazine. So titles are actually returning to print. So this is something that actually prove that it was the right decision to do, right? Especially from a brand point of view.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, probably better than most people, this conversation of print. You know, is it dead? Is it alive? Is it, you know, what is it? I still see print as the most distilled part of your brand, you know, and we are very proud to have many, many facets to what we do, many brilliant parts to our business. But print is a finite thing, you know. The internet is endless. Print, you got 300 pages, so you better use them well, you know. And it has to be the purest, most distilled, most potent form of your brand. And that's what we aim to do in a magazine. We aim to reduce down everything that we do in other parts of the business and deliver it in a really potent form. And I hope that's what people see when they read a copy of the FACE.
And Matthew, for our listeners who doesn't have a copy in their hands, one thing that I'm very glad to see, especially because I know it's been a challenging year, but, you know, it's an almost 300 page here. The magazine looks fat, looks, you know, I like that, you know, because that shows that you guys are battling, you know, the crisis, that especially because this year has been difficult for some when it comes to publishing, you know, a magazine as well.
You know, it's been very, very difficult for many, many people, and we are lucky to do what we do and to be able to make this thing that hopefully people love. We're in a very, very privileged position, you know, and I'm extremely grateful for that.
That was Matthew Whitehouse, editor of The FACE. The new issue is out now. Finally on the show, we welcome back Beth Wilkinson from Lindsay Magazine. The Melbourne-based title is an international blend of stories from hair braiding in South Africa to the new sound of Ukraine. To tell us more about the magic mix of the title, here is Beth Wilkinson, founder of Lindsay, with more from the latest issue.
There were some parts of everything that happened this year that really affected us. And then there were others that didn't so much. So like one thing, for example, is like we work with a lot of timeless editorial content. So in that respect, I felt quite free from a lot of other challenges, I guess, that other magazines were facing in terms of, you know, being limited and being able to produce really new content. Like we had a lot of our content already prepared before a lot of the lockdowns happened, and the content that we didn't, we were still able to sort of create content during that time. So from that respect, I felt like Lindsay was really well suited to be able to continue publishing during this time. But then, you know, like other magazines, you know, there were challenges faced, like, you know, obviously like retailers were closed and, you know, that's a big distribution model for us. So, you know, and then at one point, a lot of our retailers were closed here in Australia. And then as soon as we start to open up, then, you know, there's lockdowns overseas. And so I think from that respect, there was just, and I mean, shipping was a huge thing for us. That was just every week we're getting new notifications from, you know, who we ship through saying that prices were changing or they weren't shipping to certain countries. And yeah, just as a small independent publisher, I think, you know, they're just all these new things that you're having to deal with that you haven't had to deal with before. So it definitely had its challenges. But at the same time, I felt really lucky because, yeah, I was in the midst of putting together this issue when we were in our, like, the peak of our second lockdown here in Melbourne. And yeah, I felt grateful that, you know, I guess that's what I was working on every day. I was like liaising with contributors overseas and I think sort of sharing stories about what we were going through during that time. That was very sort of connecting for me. And, you know, so many of the stories in the new issue are really inspiring. So I felt like in a way that was something just very energizing, I guess, for me. And I felt like in a time when many people were struggling to feel connected, and especially on an international level, I felt like I was able to sort of, yeah, stay connected globally to the rest of the world through working on the issue.
Well, very much so. But that's a kind of a very Lindsay thing, if I may say. I mean, for example, in issue 5, you go to, you know, it is impressive how international it is. You go from, you know, from hair braiding South Africa, then you go to Mozambique and then a little bit of Ukraine. You go to even, you know, countries that perhaps people don't know much about it, but then you have this fascinating feature stories. Can you tell us perhaps some, I know you can, you know, there's so many highlights on issue 5, but some of the highlights of the issue?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the story of the hair braiding in South Africa, and that definitely feels like a highlight to me. It's just like, it's such a beautiful personal essay, and, you know, paired with, like, we were able to work with a local journalist over there and photographer, and they worked together to do this photo essay and text piece, which really does just give incredible insight into, like, yeah, the history of braiding in South Africa and beyond. And I guess, yeah, the cultural significance of that and really celebrating that. And then there's also another story that was shot in Ecuador. So they're actually the two different cover stories, which I've been working with Andres, the photographer, for quite a little while on that piece. And he's been shooting it over a number of years. And yeah, it's just such a special piece. And it's an area that he grew up locally around that area, and so the piece is very close to his heart. And I think that is what makes, in particular, like, a lot of the stories in Lindsay really special, but those two in particular, like, yeah, the people who created those stories, so close to them, it's so different to, I guess, perhaps other magazines where, you know, not all magazines like this, but on some occasions where you sort of commission a journalist and then, you know, you're researching a topic that you're less familiar with, where these stories are stories that, you know, these photographers and writers are so personally connected to and they're so personally invested in. And, yeah, I mean, the story in Ecuador is, you know, about these local families of weavers who are trying to essentially keep these traditions alive. And they talk about, you know, using different plants to, like, dye all the materials. And it's just, it's such a beautiful story. And I think stories like that can, you know, sometimes I think they can be really hard to do well because they can sort of feel a little bit voyeuristic or something, I think, if it's not, like, part of your own culture and you're reporting on it. But I think the fact that Andreas has built this connection with this family you know, over so many years, it really just feels, yeah, very honest and true and a real celebration of their craft.
I love the story of the still life from that bakery in Tel Aviv as well. I think it was quite fun, quite interesting as well to see.
Yeah, so beautiful. Yeah, we've worked with Olga, the photographer, who for all of our issues, actually. So, and that was a slightly different piece for her. But yeah, I also love that piece.
And Beth, I have a question. I was looking at your website. Of course, if someone orders a Lindsay in Australia, it will be delivered from where you are there in Melbourne. But you also have a warehouse in Germany. So is that just shows kind of, you know, how international the magazine is. So if someone, let's say I'm here in London, and if someone wants to order Lindsay, so it will come from Germany then?
Yeah, so actually we've been working with our warehouse in Germany since the first issue. And I've only started shipping locally, actually, just through because of the pandemic, because, yeah, during the last few months we were having, you know, we have quite a strong Australian readership, and we're getting a lot of, you know, readers buying copies, and, you know, it was just taking so long for them to reach Australia from Germany during that time. So I ended up, you know, shifting things around so that I could, you know, ship our copies at least here locally, which again has been like, you know, something that I haven't been used to managing, which is self-distributing to our online readership. But it definitely has just like helped to be able to, like, at least all of our Australian orders are really streamlined. And then, you know, at least with Germany, like, yeah, definitely to the UK and all around Europe, it's pretty good. But yeah, the US is sort of its own thing that is a little bit harder.
Yeah, that's been one of the, again, we had a lot of discussion on the stack this year about distribution. You know, it's not only about making beautiful content, but also how you distribute then. And you have quite a good online presence. You know, there's the Readers Club as well, right?
Yeah, we do. We have that, and we ran some online events during lockdown, which was really great. We did, like, you know, some honey tastings. So here in Melbourne, we had, like, readers could order these packs of, like, honeys and cheeses, and that would be, you could come and pick them up. And then we all joined in together online, and Nick Douse from Honey Fingers would, like, talk through, like, yeah, the different honeys that you would get in your pack, and like where they came from and why the flavors are slightly different and which ones go with which cheeses. And we've been doing lots of different events like that and adapting since it's been a little bit more difficult to do in real, like, in-person events, doing more online events. And we did a beautiful conversation with some of the people involved in the new issue at Marianne Nessa's Adair in New York to celebrate. And that we streamed that live as a way to sort of, yeah, connect with our readers internationally, which has been really beautiful.
That was Beth Wilkinson from Lindsay Magazine. Issue 5 is out now. Well, that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fb@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monocle.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or SoundCloud. And before we go, a little song for you. Kraftwerk, Tour de France, the original version. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me. Tour de France, Tour de France, la Côte d'Azur et Saint-Tropez, Tour de France, Tour de France, Alpes et les Pyrénées, Tour de France, Tour de France, la Sierra et la Champs-Élysées.